American Novel. A New England family in the days of the Civil War, and one of the most dearly beloved stories ever written. The NBC University of the Air presents the first of a two-part radio edition of Louisa May Alcott's story, Little Women, another in the series of books that live. American Novel.
Mr. March, their father, used proudly to call them his little women. How hard they tried to live up to that, especially that winter during the Civil War in 1863. Meg was 16 then, Joe was 15, Beth 13, and Amy the baby was 12. How wonderful the snow was that afternoon. It was just before Christmas, and the girls sat knitting before the cheerful fire in the comfortable, shabby old drawing room.
Christmas won't be Christmas without any presents. It's so dreadful to be poor.
No, I don't think it's fair for some girls to have plenty of pretty things and other girls nothing at all.
We've got father and mother and each other.
We haven't got father, Beth. There's no telling when the war will be over and he won't be home till then.
Well, Joe, you know the reason Mother proposed not having any presents this Christmas. It's because it's going to be a hard winter for everyone, and she thinks we oughtn't to spend money for pleasure.
But, Meg, I don't think the little we should spend would do any good. We've each got only a dollar, and I agree not to expect anything from Mother or you, but I do want to buy a book for myself.
I want to spend mine in new music. I think you should, Beth, and I shall get a nice box of drawing pencils. I really need them.
Mother didn't say anything about our own money. Let's each buy what we want and have a little fun. I'm sure we work hard enough to earn it.
I know I do, teaching those tiresome children nearly all day.
Oh, you don't have half such a hard time as I do, Meg. How would you like to be shut up for hours with a nervous, fussy old lady like Aunt March and her crazy parrot and poodle?
I know it's naughty to fret, but I do think washing dishes and keeping things tidy is the worst work in the world. I don't believe any of you suffer as I do.
Oh.
But you don't have to go to school with impertinent girls who laugh at your dresses and label your father if he isn't rich.
Libel, not label, silly. Papa's no pickle bottle.
You needn't be satirical about it.
Oh, Amy.
It's proper to use good words and improve your vocabulary.
Now, don't peck at one another, girls. Amy, your airs are funny now, but you'll grow up to be an affected little goose if you don't take care.
Oh, it's 6 o'clock and time for Mommy to come home.
I'll get her slippers out to be warm.
Yes, Beth, dear. Bring them here and I'll hold them before the fire while Meg lights the lamps and Amy straightens the room.
Oh, yes, we want it to look cheerful and pretty when Mommy comes.
Here are the slippers, Joe.
Oh, they're quite worn out.
Yes.
Mommy simply must have a new pair.
I thought I'd get her some with my dollar.
Oh, no, let me.
Oh, I'm the oldest. I'm the man of the family now Papa's away, and I shall provide the slippers. Mm.
I tell you what we'll do. Let's each get her something for Christmas and not get anything for ourselves.
Oh, that's like you, Beth.
Oh, yes.
Wonderful. What shall we get?
Well, I shall give her a nice pair of gloves.
A pair of slippers, best to be had.
Some handkerchiefs, all hemmed by hand.
Oh, nice.
I'll get her a bottle of cologne.
Oh, let Mommy think that we're getting things for ourselves and then surprise her.
Oh, yes, and Meg, there's not much time. We've got lots of practicing still to do on the Christmas play I wrote.
Joe, I don't see how you write and act such splendid things. You're a regular Shakespeare.
Oh, not quite. I do think The Witch's Curse, an operatic tragedy, is rather a nice thing, but, oh, I'd like to try Macbeth. If only I had a trapdoor for Banquo. I always wanted to do the killing part. Is this a dagger that I see before me?
No, it's a toasting fork with Mother's slipper.
I'm glad to find you so merry,
Mommy.
My girl.
Here, let me take your wet cloak and bonnet, Mother.
Thank you, Meg.
Sit here, Mommy.
Oh, it's good to be home with my darlings. And I've got a treat for you.
Oh.
A letter. It's a letter from Father.
Yes, a nice long letter.
Well, read it.
All right, girls, now be quiet if you want to hear. My own dearest. How much I miss you and the four girls. In my mind's eye, I can see all of you, just as you are. You in the big chair by the fire, and the girls clustered around you. Give them all my dear love and a kiss. I think of them by day and pray for them by night. I know that they too will win the battle each of us must fight with himself and conquer themselves so beautifully that when I come back to them, I may be fonder and prouder than ever of my little women.
Many a girlish vow was made to live up to the hopes of their absent father, for each girl knew well the little faults with which she had to struggle and sincerely tried to do better. And then came Christmas morning, and what a wonderful Christmas it was. When the girls arose, they found that Mommy had stolen out early to visit a poor family, and they found it hard to wait till she got back to give her her presents. And the Christmas breakfast they prepared, buckwheats and piping hot muffins, and the smell of coffee wafted right from heaven. They were famished when Mommy came in.
Merry Christmas,
little daughters. And what a beautiful breakfast.
Isn't it wonderful?
But before we sit down, let me say one word. Not far away from here lies a poor woman with a little newborn baby. Six children are huddled into one bed to keep from freezing. But they have no fire. There's nothing to eat over there. And they're suffering. My girls, will you give them your breakfast as a Christmas present?
Oh, yes, Marlene.
I thought you'd do it. You shall all go and help me. And when we come back, we'll have bread and milk for breakfast and make it up at dinner time.
I think there were not in all the city four merrier people than the hungry little girls who gave away their breakfast and contented themselves with bread and milk on Christmas morning. Then followed the giving of the little gifts to Mommy. And the rest of the day was spent in preparations for the evening's festivity, which was to consist of the presentation of Joe's Christmas play for the entertainment of some dozen girls of the neighborhood. And all went well with the play, and it was much enjoyed, if a little rough in spots. But the climax of the evening came when they were all summoned downstairs to supper. And what a supper!
Look at the table! Christmas cake! French flowers! Where did it all come from?
Old Mr. Lawrence from next door sent it.
The Lawrence boy's grandfather?
Mm-hmm. What in the world put such a thing into his head? We don't know him.
One of his servants found out about your breakfast party and told him, and it pleased him.
Wow.
He knew my father years ago, and this afternoon he sent me a polite note saying he hoped I would allow him to send my children a few trifles in honor of the day.
Oh, nice.
I couldn't refuse. And so you have a little feast at night to make up for the bread and milk breakfast.
That boy put it into his head. I know he did. He's a capital fellow. I wish we could get acquainted.
Well, I've heard that old Mr. Lawrence is very proud with all his money and fine house and doesn't like to mix with his neighbors.
He keeps that grandson shut up when he isn't riding or walking with his tutor and makes him study very, very hard.
Well, I don't propose to be the first to make advances to him.
Well, I mean to know him someday. He needs fun. I'm sure he does.
The idea amused Joe, and she planned many ways of making friends with him. But he'd not been seen lately, and Joe began to think he'd gone away. When one snowy day, she spied a brown face at an upper window, looking wistfully down into their garden. And Joe resolved to try what could be done. She saw Mr. Lawrence drive off, and then sallied out to dig her way down to the hedge, where she paused and took a survey.
There he is at the upper window, poor boy. All alone and sick this dismal day. It's a shame. I'll toss up a snowball and make him look out, and I'll say a kind word to him. That roused him.
How do you do? Are you sick?
Better, thank you. I've had a bad cold and been shut up a week.
I'm sorry. What do you amuse yourself with?
Nothing. It's as dull as tombs up here.
Don't you read?
Not much. They won't let me.
Can't somebody read to you?
Oh, Grandpa does sometimes, but my books don't interest him, and I hate to ask my tutor Brooke all the time.
We'll have someone come and see you then.
Isn't anyone I'd like to see? Boys make such a row, and I get silly to look.
Well, isn't there some nice girl who'd read and amuse you?
Don't know any.
You know us.
So I do. Will you come, please?
I'll come if Mother will let me. I'll go ask her. Shut that window like a good boy and wait. Well, here I am, bag and baggage. Mother sent her love, and she was glad if I could do anything for you. Oh, what a cozy room this is.
Thank you. Oh, here, take the big chair and let me do something to amuse my company.
Oh, no, I came to amuse you. Shall I read aloud? Some of those books look very interesting.
Thank you, but I've read all those, and if you don't mind, I'd rather talk.
Oh, not a bit. I'll talk all day if you'll only set me going. Beth says I never know when to stop.
Is Beth the rosy one who stays at home a good deal?
Yes, that's Beth. She's my girl, and a regular good one she is, too.
The pretty one is Meg, and the curly-haired one is Amy, I believe.
How did you find that out?
Well, you see, I often hear you calling to one another. And when I'm alone up here, I can't help looking over at your house. You always seem to be having such good times.
Oh, I just wish instead of watching, you'd come over to see us. Wouldn't your grandpa let you?
I think he would if your mother asked him. He's very kind, though he doesn't look so. Only he's afraid I might be a bother to strangers.
We aren't strangers. We're neighbors, and you needn't think you'd be a bother. We want to know you.
And so the time passed pleasantly while Joe told stories of the good times at the March household and of her experiences with Aunt March, the poodle, and the parrot. Finally, the talk turned to books, and finding that they shared a real love for them, Laurie took Joe down to his grandfather's library. Just at this point, the doctor arrived, and Laurie excused himself to have an examination, and Joe was left alone to amuse herself in the beautiful old room. She was standing in front of a fine portrait of the old gentleman when the door behind her opened again, and thinking it, Laurie returned.
I'm sure now that I shouldn't be afraid of your grandfather. He's got kind eyes, though his mouth is grim, and he looks as if he had a tremendous will of his own. He isn't as handsome as my grandfather, but I like him.
Thank you, ma'am.
Oh.
So you're not afraid of me, eh?
Not much, sir.
And you don't think me as handsome as your grandfather?
Not quite, sir.
And I've got a tremendous will, have I?
I only said I thought so.
But you like me, in spite of it?
Yes, I do, sir.
You've got your grandfather's spirit. He was a fine man, my dear. And I was proud to be his friend.
Thank you, sir.
What have you been doing to this boy of mine, eh?
Oh, only trying to be neighborly, sir. I'd seen him at his window looking very lonely and sad, and I thought that what he needs is the companionship of young people, and I decided to see what I could do.
You think he needs cheering up a bit, do you?
Yes, sir. We're only girls, but we should be glad to help if we could.
Yeah, but now it's tea time. Come along, and go on being neighborly.
If you'd like to have me, sir.
I shouldn't ask you if I didn't. My arm, young lady.
Tea was a very happy experience. And watching the young people chatting away like old friends, the old gentleman decided that Joe was right. The boy had been lonely, and that he'd see what these girls could do for Laurie. So when Joe left after tea, he extended to them all a hearty invitation to visit the Lawrence household as often as they liked, an invitation the girls were not slow to accept. The results were pleasant.
Let's rehearse your play tonight, Joe.
Oh, Mommy, they've got the most beautiful pictures I can copy, and tonight we're going on a sleigh ride. Mr. Lawrence is so kind to let me practice on his wonderful piano. I'm going to make him a pair of worsted slippers with pansies on the toes. Mommy, we're going on a skating party with Laurie.
Oh, Beth, look what came for you while you were out.
A lovely little cabinet piano.
Isn't it beautiful?
Oh, whatever.
It's from old Mr. Lawrence. Oh. And here's a note for you.
Quick, Beth, read it aloud.
Oh, dear. Joe, you read it for me. I never could.
Well, all right. Well, let me have it.
Joe, hurry.
Can't get. Oh. There. Now I've got it. It says, Miss March, dear madam, I have had many pairs of slippers in my life, but I never had any that suited me as well as yours. Pansies are my favorite flower, and these will always remind me of the gentle giver. I like to pay my debts, so I know you will allow the old gentleman to send you something which once belonged to the little granddaughter he lost.
Oh.
With hearty thanks and best wishes, I remain your grateful friend, humble servant, James Lawrence. Oh, dear Beth, that's an honor to be proud of.
Oh, yes. And isn't the piano beautiful?
It's lovely. Laurie told me how fond Mr. Lawrence used to be of the grandchild who died. Just think, Beth, he's given you her piano. That comes of having big blue eyes and loving music.
And so the winter passed and spring came, and there were picnics and wonderful outings for Laurie and the girls. And it gradually came to be noticed that John Brooke, Laurie's tutor, was showing a rather marked preference for Meg, and that she shyly returned his interest. Joe, jealous for the family solidarity, pooh-poohed the whole idea. But for the most part, she was too busily absorbed in her writing to notice much. For several days, Joe had been very busy in the garret where she loved to write. And now, she has taken two manuscripts and gone into the town where she was observed by Laurie, who happened to be watching from across the street, to enter a rather dingy building bearing, among others, the sign of a dentist, remain for about 10 minutes, and then come running downstairs with a very red face. Laurie was waiting for her.
Hello, Joe.
Oh, Teddy, Lawrence, what are you doing here?
Oh, just happened along. Did you have a bad time?
Not very.
You got through quickly.
Yes, thank goodness.
How many did you have out?
There are two which I want to have come out, but I must wait a week.
What are you laughing at, Joe?
It's a secret.
Oh, I've got some news you'd like to hear.
Oh, really?
I'll tell it to you if you'll tell me your secret.
Well, all right, but you'll not say anything about it at home, will you?
No, not a word.
Well, I've left two stories with a newspaper man, and he's going to give me his answer next week.
Well, hurrah for Miss March, the celebrated American author.
Hush, it won't come to anything, but I couldn't rest till I tried.
It won't fail. Why, Joe, your stories are works of Shakespeare compared to half the rubbish
Laurie.
That's published every day.
Oh,
won't it be fun to see him in print?
Oh, yes, Laurie, that would be wonderful. Now, where's your secret?
Remember the pair of gloves that Meg left at our house and only one could be found?
Yes.
I know where the other glove is.
Is that all?
Well, you hear where it is, though.
Tell them.
John Brooke has it.
John, how do you know?
Start.
Where?
In his pocket.
All this time?
Yes. Isn't that romantic?
No. It's horrid.
Don't you like it?
Well, of course I don't. It's ridiculous. It won't be allowed.
I thought you'd be pleased.
At the idea of anybody coming to take Meg away? No, thank you.
You'll feel better about it when somebody comes to take you away.
I'd like to see anybody try it.
So should I.
I don't think secrets agree with me. I feel all rumpled up in my mind since you told me that.
A good race through the clear fall air helped to smooth out Joe's mind. But for the next week or two, she behaved so queerly that her sisters were quite bewildered. She rushed to the door when the postman rang, was rude to Mr. Brooke whenever they met, and would sit looking at Meg with a woe-begone face. On the second Saturday, Meg sat sewing at the window.
Well, my goodness, there's Laurie chasing Joe all over the garden. What shall we do with that girl? She never will behave like a young lady.
I hope she won't. She's so funny and dear as she is.
It's very trying, but we never can make her comme il faut.
Comme il...
Oh, Amy, darling, it's comme il faut.
Isn't that what I said?
Oh, my goodness sakes, you two. Can't you ever come in quietly?
There's a story in the paper that Joe wants to read to
you. Oh, it doesn't amount to much, I guess. I just thought you might be interested.
What's the title?
The Rival Painter.
Oh, that sounds well.
Wouldn't read it.
Yes,
all
Joe.
Right. The Rival Painter. Many years ago, and to this day, in Burlingham Castle, the old cobwebbed halls echo the dismal tale of the rival painters who died by the poisoned hand.
Oh, that was a good story, Joe. So nice and sad?
Yes. I particularly like the lovering part. Viola and Angelo are two of our favorite names. Isn't that queer?
Joe, who wrote that story?
Your sister.
You!
Oh, Joe, it's wonderful!
Isn't she grand? Look, there's her name. The Rival Painters by Miss Josephine Marks.
Tell us all about it. I'll tell you everything. First, I didn't get paid for the story at all, but the man told me that he will take all I can send him, and I will get paid for them after this, and I'm so happy. In time, I may be able to support myself and help you girls.
Oh, that must be Mother. She's home early.
Won't she be happy about Joe's story?
Oh,
girls, I'm afraid I've got bad news for us all.
Mom?
It's in this telegram, Joe.
Yes, Mother.
Let me sit down a moment.
What is it, Mother?
Mrs. March, your husband is very ill. Come at once. S. Hale National Hospital, Washington.
I shall go at once, of course, but it may be too late.
Of course not.
Let me think. Where's Laurie?
She's here, ma'am. Let me do something to help.
Laurie, send a telegram saying I'll come at once. The next train goes early in the morning. I'll take that.
What else? The horses are ready. I can go anywhere, do anything.
I want you to take a note to Aunt March. I must ask her for some money. Joe, you must run out to get a list of things I may need for the nursing.
Beth,
go and ask Mr. Lawrence for a couple of bottles of old wine.
Right.
Amy, go get down the little black trunk. And Meg, come and help me find my things. I'm half bewildered.
Of course.
Old Mr. Lawrence rushed right over, offering everything from the wine and a dressing gown for Father to himself as escort. He was too old to make the trip, but Ma Mee almost sobbed with relief when Laurie's tutor, Mr. Brooke, offered to go instead. Finally, everything was packed and ready, and the girls were left alone. The days stretched into weeks, and at last the news from Washington was good. Their father was improving, but Mother and Mr. Brooke remained with him. Things hummed again, and the hearts of the girls were glad. But one day, Beth was missed. They found her lying on her mother's bed.
Oh, Beth, what are you doing in Mommy's room?
I thought I'd lie down a little. My head aches and I feel tired.
Well, let me feel your head. It looks hot. Beth, it's burning.
Oh, Joe, I've been tending the little baby we went to see Christmas Day. She's been sick and today she died while I was there.
What did she die of?
Scarlet fever.
Oh, Beth, tell me, dear. Do you have a sore throat and a headache and a kind of a funny feeling in your bones?
Yes. Oh, no. But don't be frightened, Meg. I shan't have it badly.
Come on, Joe, what should we do?
We can't send for Marmy. She can't leave Papa.
No. I'll go for the doctor.
I'll take Amy to Aunt March so she doesn't catch it.
Joe, don't go away.
I'll be right back, dear. And I won't leave your side for a minute, Beth. I'll take care of you till you're all well.
And Joe didn't leave her. Day and night in the dungeon of the sick room, she watched beside her pale, piteous little sister. It was a terrible ordeal. But with the doctor's consent, the girls didn't tell their mother. But one bleak December day...
Joe, I think you'd better send for your mother.
But Papa's had a relapse. How can she leave him?
I'm sorry, but if anything happened, you'd want
to... Oh, no. I can't give up my Bessie. I can't.
You've been brave so far.
Because I'd hope. And now there's nobody here to help us bear it.
I'm here.
Oh, Laurie. Oh, forgive me. I was so upset I didn't see you.
Hold on to me, Joe, dear.
Oh, what a comfort you are. Oh, dear. I don't feel so forlorn anymore. I'll go send a telegram for Mother.
Joe, wait.
I can't, Laurie.
I telegraphed your mother yesterday. She'll be here tonight.
Oh, Laurie. You're an angel. How can I ever thank you?
The way you just did. A kiss is the best reward.
Oh, I didn't mean to do that. Oh, that was dreadful of me. You were such a dear to go and do it. I couldn't help flying at you.
Fly at me again. I rather like it.
That night, there was a bad storm, and Mommy's return was delayed hour after hour. And during the night, a crisis came in Beth's illness. The girls watched fearfully as little Beth struggled with a fever. Then suddenly she sighed and relaxed and lay still. Their heart sank as the doctor stooped over the quiet, pale form.
Good. The fever has turned. She's sleeping naturally.
Then she'll live.
She'll be all right?
Yes. Yes, I think the little girl will pull through this time.
Oh, thank God.
Heaven.
Now keep the house very quiet. Let her sleep, and when she wakes, give her a spoonful of it.
Poor girl.
Marmee.
Oh, Marmee, you're home.
The day Joe carried Beth down to the parlor sofa, their happiness was almost unbearable. And just at that moment, their father stood at the door, and Beth ran straight into his arms. They were together at last. Joe's heart sang with the psalmist, "My cup runneth over." But she forgot the part about, "in the presence of mine enemies." But she shouldn't have. She knew John Brooke was still very much in the picture. And a day or two later, she overheard the following conversation.
I'll answer.
Why, good afternoon, Miss Margaret.
Oh, Mr. Brooke, what is it by?
I came to get my umbrella.
That is,
to see how your father finds himself today.
Oh, it's very well. He's in the rack. I'll get him and tell it you're here. Oh, you wait. Wait right here.
Innocent enough. A man comes for his umbrella, and a girl blushes and stammers. But Joe knew the reason for Meg's confusion, and her heart sank with foreboding.
Little Women by Louisa May Alcott is one of America's novels, brought to you each week by the NBC University of the Air. Listen next week to the second episode of Little Women, and don't forget that there's a world of entertainment and information to be found in your local public library. Many American novels in the 1947 summer series are included in the useful handbook of the World's Great Novels, which you may obtain by sending 25 cents to World's Great Novels, Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27, New York. That's Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27. We'd like to remind you also that daylight savings time ends in certain areas on Sunday, September 28th. It's possible that this program will be heard at a different time in most communities next week. Please listen for announcements on your local station or check your local newspaper for the time this program will be heard next week and every week thereafter. Little Women was adapted for radio in part by Ethel Harris Gregory. The music was composed by Emil Soderstrom, and the orchestra was directed by Bernard Berquist. The entire production was under the direction of Homer Heck. Joe is played by Geraldine Kay, Meg by Martha McCain, Beth by Doris Grundy, and Amy by Mary Ann O'Neill. Marmee is played by Fern Persons, Laurie by Charles Flynn, Mr. Lawrence by Stanley Gordon, and Mr. Brooks by Larry Alexander. The narrator is Jonathan Hole. This is Don Elder. This program comes to you from Chicago and is a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.